For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, are we good to go on the phones?
Good to go. Yep.
So our next guest is one of our local longtime listeners and guests of the show, and he's not a jack of all trades; he's a Jeff of all trades. Our man Jeff Hood, who joins us, who, you know, I was thinking about this, Logan. We need to. And this is no offense to Tyler, but we need to like do a NASCAR trivia game and pit Jeff and Tyler against each other and see how things go with that one. I would put my money on Jeff, but again, that's more of a Jeff thing than a Tyler thing. Those are the two guys that know as much about racing as anybody. Now, that's not why we got Jeff on the show here, but before we do get to what I wanted to talk to you about, so, and Jeff, by the way, is a high school football official, and there's some new interesting guidelines or protocols that'll be coming down for officiating. And you know, we talk about sports and we talk about teams and coaches, we don't talk about the officials. So I did want to ask Jeff about that, but before we get to that, Jeff, so I've gotten into the truck racing now, and I know people think I'm crazy, but it's the races are shorter. Maybe the drivers aren't quite as experienced, so you may not know what you're going to get from race to race, and that was certainly the case at Pocono this past weekend, where Logan, I don't know if you noticed, I think we talked about it yesterday, the guy that won the race, Brandon Jones, who won the truck race as the first race of the triple header, he drives for Kyle Busch in the trucks. You know, Kyle Busch, one of those guys, if you don't win, you know, he'll go get somebody else to you know, race for him. But I wanted to ask Jeff the irony of the truck race was a grind because they had a bunch of wrecks. And then the guy who won the race, Brandon Jones, wrecked on the first lap of the Xfinity race like less than an hour later. Just kind of funny how that worked out. But was that in the – I mean, I guess they didn't have any choice, but you had a lot of guys in the truck race who hadn't even basically driven around that track at Pocono, and that's kind of an odd track, right, because it doesn't have a turn four. But what was your synopsis of all of that on Sunday?
Yeah, it was really weird to have first time ever in the history of NASCAR to run three major races all on the same day.
Yeah.
But, you know, they made such a big deal in years past that drivers had to be approved before they could run in NASCAR. Typically, there would be a process. You'd have to run a short track, an intermediate, before you could graduate to a big track like Pocono, because, you know, the straightaways are long, it's a flat track, but you're carrying so much speed into those corners, even in a truck, 190 miles an hour. And, you know, if you go from go-karts to a truck, 190 miles an hour and a hard left-hand turn, that's not going to end well. So I think you could attribute a lot of those wrecks on Sunday morning to guys that, you know, had never seen that track and they just got baptized on Sunday morning.
And also, like, Michael Waltrip was one of the announcers, and they kind of predicted it was going to be kind of weird because of the unfamiliarity of that. And the other thing, too, about the I don't know if it's whatever it is about the trucks, and I didn't realize Tyler kind of pointed this out to me, that like if there's 30 or 40 drivers in that race in the trucks, there's literally only like what, 10 or 12 that have a chance to win, maybe 15. There's a lot of those drivers that are out there that are just trying to not get in a wreck and run laps and make a little money. I didn't realize that was a thing until the last month. Is that kind of a way of putting it,
and you could even go back 5-10 years in the truck series, and typically it would be 12 to 15 driver/teams that had a legitimate shot to win. You're always going to have that where, you know, something fluky happens, and then some guy that probably would have on any other day finished 12th to 15th that had a shot to win. But, you know, all things being equal, it really is its experience, and a lot of its equipment too, because I was doing for John Westfanley here in Watkinsville. He ran the truck series for several years, and so I kind of got a first-hand glimpse of the equipment. you had some that was really good, and you had some that was, they probably should be running on a dirt track somewhere, not so good. So, and somewhere in between. So it's a mixture.
And see, and, I don't have enough deep down knowledge to know that your Chevy is different than my Chevy, right? I mean, depending on who, you know, if you're driving for Kyle Busch and I'm driving for me, right, and we're both in the same type car, what is, I guess he's a Toyota, but your Toyota would be different than my Toyota, right?
Well, it comes down to a lot, same thing you see in a lot of things in business these days, and that's how much money are you spending?
Yeah.
Because you would be amazed at, like, something simple like a shock absorber or springs. And, you know, they have certain requirements, but then the team that spends $50 on those shocks, they're going to be at the back of the pack because the Kyle Busch Motorsports guys spent $10,000 on their shocks because it's going to save them or pick up, I don't know, 0.3 in the corner. But they spend a lot of money on their shocks, and the little guy can't afford it. So it's just the little things like that. Yeah, everybody has the same rule package, cubic inch size of engine, transmission gear ratio, etc. But money buys speed is the bottom line.
Hey, I get it. I totally get it. Jeff Hood is joining us here. All right, so anyone that's not into racing, I apologize. We veered off, no pun intended there, for just a moment. The reason we brought Jeff on is Jeff's a high school football official. What's your main what position do you play? What do you mainly do when you're officiating?
Yeah, so I have worked on the line of scrimmage as a field judge and a head linesman. You know, we basically, our assignment would be to watch the offensive line, guys in motion, the backfield, et cetera. But last year I worked a lot as a deep field judge, side judge, and I like that because you get to see how fast you are against some of these amazing receivers and defensive backs around our area. So primarily that. I've did one game as an umpire, which is the guy that kind of stands back there with the linebackers.
Yeah.
So I've moved around and kind of dipped my toe, you know, all the positions around the field pretty much.
So there was a what was the meeting last night? Was this a statewide high school football officials meeting? What was it? And tell us a little bit about what came out of it from the officiating side.
So just to kind of set the scene, around the state of Georgia, there's various associations that come together, and they provide the officiating services for the teams in the GHSA or the GISA. In your area, and I'm part of the Northeast Georgia Officials Association, and we pretty much have the Athens area. You could draw a circle, big circle, I'm not sure, it's a dozen or so counties, and we pretty much have all those high school games. So, you know, there's been a lot of talk about high school, college, and I guess NFL players, you know, starting to get ready for the upcoming season, but the officials have to get ready. I can assure you, we do not just show up for the first game.
What are you talking about?
Sunday morning. We do not just show up, so we have to go over, you know, rule changes and, you know, getting back into the swing of things, you know, the routines, our signals, et cetera. And so we did have a meeting last night. We're doing the Zoom thing, and we're hoping to get together soon. But this is pretty much handed down either by the Georgia High School Association or the National High School Football Federation. And there were a few things. There have been some football rule changes, nothing major. But what was interesting is they were discussing last night, or we were made aware of some COVID-related changes. And I think a lot of people have kind of wondered because, you know, we've seen with sports that are back, you know, no fans, limited fans. But what about what's going on, you know, on the playing surface? And so really what we were told about is really more for the officials. But it was kind of interesting. For instance, social distancing at a high school football game, and the officials will not be responsible for enforcing that. And I take it that to be more, you know, like the sidelines or the stands. I mean, we can't have anybody look at us and say, "Hey, they're not social distancing up on row 13." It's like,
well, yeah, of course,
that's not up to us.
Yeah,
the school or the team. So you know, just. That we were told that, and then also from the officiating standpoint, only two of our officials, the referee and the umpire, will meet with the head coach before the game. Because in years past, you know, several of us will go over, introduce ourselves, shake hands, and so, you know, we have to stay away from the shaking hands.
Yeah.
And then another one that will be kind of unique that the fans may notice is that we were told in years past, four captains could go to midfield for the coin toss from both sides of both teams. Well, now they're only going to allow one player per team on the field for the coin toss. So I think that will stand out because fans will look and like, there used to be a bunch of guys out there for the coin toss. And I don't know how this is going to, you know, roll over to college in the NFL, but only one player per team for the coin toss. And then for the officials, it's recommended that we bring our own beverage, and I will say that is like a water or Powerade or Gatorade.
Yeah, what kind of beverage are we talking about?
Yeah. So we want to clarify here.
Yes.
We bring our own beverage, which kind of makes sense in this day and age. You know, we pack a couple of Dasani waters or something like that. And then something else, the National High School Football Federation has recommended that timeouts be extended from 60 seconds to 2 minutes, which makes sense because it is kind of a free-for-all. If you've ever been on the field during a timeout or just kind of looked from the stands, and you'll notice that those players are just, you know, they're passing around the squirt bottles and all that. So they're going to have to, and that's really on the school, you know, to figure out, you know, how do we make it, you know, safe and all that. So, but again, the National High School Football Federation is recommending extending timeouts, and that could be an official's timeouts or a team takes timeout, from 60 seconds to 120 seconds. So, and that, I agree with that. You know, it gives everybody a little more time to, you know, be safe, to get hydrated.
Right, right. And, of course, the biggie that you're about to say, I'm curious your thoughts on this, but go ahead.
Yeah, so we were told also that as of now, the GHSA is not requiring officials to wear a mask. And I've been wondering for the past few weeks, how do you wear a mask and blow a whistle? So
that's a good question.
We were told that there is such a thing as an electronic whistle. So if an official wants to wear some type of face covering, I looked it up. You can buy an electronic whistle. Hmm. So anyway, and again, they were just telling us, you know, GHSA and the high school stuff. So will be interesting to see, you know, what the college and pro guys do. Because always remember, if there are no officials, there's no game. So the officials, and we talk about that a lot.
Well, you could put that whistle in your pocket, like they like to say that too. Then you don't have to worry about blowing a whistle. So,
a lot of fans are asking you if you could do just that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, and I get what you're saying, you know, like, you know, penalties and all, but, you know, we blow the whistle by out of bounds. And, you know, like in high school, the team gets a first down, stops the clock, we blow the whistle, you know, they reset the chains, et cetera. So,
well, Jeff, all that's interesting. Are you going to wear a mask?
At this point, no. We'll just kind of see, you know, how things go with the virus and all. And, you know, what's interesting is when you think of social distancing, and I've had this conversation with so many friends over the past few weeks, how do you social distance if you're a football player?
I know.
It's like you're constantly hitting guys.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, with your pads and all and touching. So,
do you feel like, too, that I was wondering this, and Logan, jump in if you got a question. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to hog everything.
Do you think some
schools are going to be like, you know, are players going to be required? Or if my school shows up to play your school, does every player have to show a negative test for the COVID? And you know, are high schools going to be a little bit more lenient, or not lenient's not the word, but like less, I don't know, open about players that might have tested positive but don't have a symptom or anything? And then are there some schools that can afford to do more testing than other schools? I mean, how is that stuff going to work? I mean, these are probably questions for for some of our eight local ADs and coaches and stuff like that. Right. But what are you guys being told about that kind of stuff?
You know, that didn't come up in discussion last night. I was curious because, ironically, when we were doing a Zoom call last night, and I was in my gym on a bike while I was watching, and they checked my temperature like 5 minutes before I got on the Zoom call. So I was thinking, so when we show up to officiate, are they going to check our temperature? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's a little too early. Granted, tomorrow's July 1st, and the regular season for high school in Georgia starts August 21st. So it's not that far away. And honestly, David and Tyler, I think we're going to have to wait for more directives from the GHSA. You know, what are they going to specifically tell the teams? Like, you know, testing, temperature, you know, anything health related. So I think, you know, that will be, I mean, it's to be determined, but it's going to have to come down the pipe pretty quick here.
All right, Logan, what do you got for Jeff?
I'm just trying to envision this whole thing. So a lot of these rules that are put into place, are you guys being asked, maybe it's not a violation of an actual football rule, but if you notice something that may be in violation of a social distancing or something like that, are you guys sort of asked to patrol those things? And I'm trying to think of a good example, like even players on a sideline or just maybe somebody mingling somewhere along the end zone or something like that.
I thought of this, Logan. What about, like, what if a coach wants to yell at you and he's, you know, he gets within 6 feet of you? You got to tell him to, hey, you need to argue with me, but you got to do it socially distanced. You know what I mean?
I hear you. But that kind of goes back, you know, to the first point I made, and that is that it really is up to the school and teams to enforce that. And I will say this, David, your first question to me today was, you know, what positions have I worked? And I've worked on the line of scrimmage as the linesman or the field judge on the other side of the field. And here's the deal. We're going to be right there with the players. I mean, if somebody catches a pass that's coming toward us, coming out of bounds, it's going to be difficult to hold on. I got to get back 6 feet. So, I mean, it just ain't going to happen. But those players with the, like, there's a buffer of three yards from the out of bounds line to, it's our area to roam the field, to the, where the sideline starts, where their box. And so we're, you know, and the guys that run the guys that hold the chain. I mean, if you're running if you're the head linesman, you're right there with the chain crew, you know, the entire night. And there is no way you can be 6 feet apart from them.
No, exactly. So exactly.
There are some things where that rule just will not apply.
Well, Logan, you've had the question about the football. How many people touch the football from one play to the next?
Yeah, no, Dave and I have kind of tracked this thing. We've gone from the ball boy on the sideline, flips it to the referee who puts it on the ground, the center, the quarterback, the running back, and then so on and on. Is that something that's come up of how do we keep the football sanitized, or is that one of those you just have to accept the fact that it's not going to be?
Well, I haven't heard any discussion about that, And Tyler, Logan, I don't think there's any way to sanitize the football.
I agree. It's just one of those things where that's a lot of hands.
Yes. And typically on a Friday night, you know, we have to approve of football as far as the texture of the football, how much air, you know, is in the ball and all, Tom Brady.
Exactly.
Typically a team will have, and they have a kicking ball too, so they're, you know, it's not just like one ball. I mean, there could be anywhere from three to six on a normal Friday night that get rotated in and out of the game. And you're correct, you got a ball boy, you know, that he will hand it to the official, and we touch the ball a lot. I mean, even on the sideline, we're rotating the ball in and out, and you know, and then who knows if it's a fumble. That's a free-for-all. You could have six or seven guys get their paws on the ball, so I don't know how you would police that.
Jeff Hood joins us, who is a local high school football official. And again, Jeff of all trades. You don't have to answer this next question if you don't want to. But on your Zoom call, I don't know how many officials you had on there last night. But did y'all have like a feeling of the season being played or cut in half or region games only? Or, you know, were you just, when you guys were just kind of talking, was there a feeling that the 10-game regular season might not be what we think it's going to be right now?
Now, I get the sense that we're going to play ball. I mean, there was really never any talk about, you know, season delayed or season cut short. None of that. So, I mean, it was good vibes, and you know, we're proceeding as if we're going to have football as normal, or as normal as it could be.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm glad to hear that. Although, yeah, of course, as we all know, 2 weeks from now may as well be 2 years from now with some of the stuff. You know, things change so much. So,
oh sure,
yeah. All right. By the way, who's going to win the truck race at Kentucky on July 11? I need to know because I got to get my I got to tell my folks who to put my money on. Kyle Busch be racing in that one?
You know, I need to look and see. I think you or someone had asked Tyler a few weeks ago if he had used up all of his eligible starts.
Yeah,
which I think is only five or so. I haven't seen an entry list for that race yet.
All right,
but you know, I'll say Matt Crafton. He's a champion veteran, and he runs well at Kentucky. So I'd put the all nod right for Crafton in the number 88.
So if he doesn't get knocked out on the first lap like he did this past weekend, he's got a chance to win.
Yeah, he's due for some good luck at Kentucky.
I think it was him. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeff, thanks, man. Good talking to you. We appreciate it. We'll jump back in with you again as we get closer to the season and see how things are looking for a side of the sports world that we don't talk about very much, and that's the officials. Like
yeah,
you said,
and, you know, we've got and the officiating obviously is part of the game, but I'm really, aside from that, I'm looking forward to the season because we've got so much talent in this area. The Vandegrift kid over at Prince, the Bubba Chandler at North Oconee. We got so many great coaches in our area. I mean, I love hearing Dave Perno talk on your show. Opinionated and tells it like it is. And just, you know, we're blessed. And I hope people will get out and support these area players on Friday night when the season starts on August 21st.
And by the way, we got an email from Normaltown Dan that says WWEFD, which stands for What Would Earl Fales Do? That's always a good thing to live by with Coach Fales. In the refereeing and the officiating.
And Jeff, don't let anybody tell you different. I do go to the game every once in a while to see the officials.
So there you go.
There you go.
Just don't get any autographs.
Yeah. That's right.
Yes.
There you go.
Hey, thanks a lot, Jeff.
Okay,
talk
guys
to you
thank
soon.
You.
Thanks,
all right,
Jeff.
So there.
Jeff Hood.
The best part of that interview was him saying, hey, no one on that conference call, that Zoom call, was talking about what the season's going to look like if it's shortened or, you know, not canceled, but, you know, if it's, he says, right now we're moving right ahead to start these games the weekend of August 21st. I like.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.